why is Margaret's for us? That's a reasonable question. By the way, I think I met everybody, but if I didn't, I'm Michael. I'm the pastor of spiritual formation and group life. We go together. We do spiritual formation in Christ in small groups. That's the place where we do discipleship here. We have other things we do. We have classes and we have teaching, all of that is to augment or work alongside small groups. Because we believe it is actually not just the best environment for doing that, we actually believe it's the environment that God created us to be in, to do that. And I say that because I think when we look at the Bible, it teaches us that we were created to be in relationship. Obviously, we were created to be in relationship with Him. That's the reason, He created us. But I think the Bible teaches us that we were also created to be in relationship with each other, and that's how He's going to grow us up. That He, designed us in relationship in such a way that that's how He matures us. You see it everywhere. The whole Bible is just a story of relationships. First, our relationship with Him. In fact, God in His very character, in the core of who He is relationship. We don't completely understand it, but we know the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, right? Three in one. Who He is community. How He exists is community, and when He created us, He invited us to be a part of that community. Now, we decided, basically, the story, we decided we wanted to be God, and we knew better how we should live than He did, so that's pretty much the definition, right, of being God. So we walked away from that community. Man walked away from the community, and the rest of the story of the Bible is God pursuing us to be back in the community, wanting to reconcile and wanting to connect with us. And so you look at the Old Testament and you see how He did that. He introduced Himself again to the world and said, I'm going to do that through this man. This one man. We know that man, right? Abraham. I'm going to introduce my world through Abraham and, by the way, his family. I'm going to show the world who I am by his family. I'm going to do that by making his family a nation. And through that nation, I'm going to show how they interact with each other, the rest of the world, who I am. That's, now it didn't go quite the way he had planned, or at least how he said, but that was his desire. And when Christ came to reconcile us, the final, through his death, to God, and then he created the church, we see that happen all over again. Jesus said, I'm going to show the rest of the world who God is through this thing called the church, right? And when he started the church, when he decided how am I going to train the leaders of the church, well, we all know how he did it, right? Basically like this. He got 11, 12 guys together and lived life with them for 3 years. Did he teach them? Yeah, sure. But was that primarily what he did? No, actually, he walked through life with them every day, and they learned together, and they tried things together, and we saw, through what we've learned in the Word, that things didn't always go great, that sometimes they were, we look at some of the things they do and said, how could they be so silly? They were living with Jesus and didn't know it, but we see him live life, train him up, be ready, so much so that when he left, after he had reconciled us to his death, to the Father, when he left and they were forced with, how do I start the church? It's, the Acts 2 story, the day of Pentecost, and the church begins, and the Holy Spirit comes down, and Peter tells a great message, and now 3,000 people on the first day. We were talking about how many people come to Grace or how many people call. Well, we have 3,000 people on the weekend. They have 3,000 people day one. We've had 30 years to figure out how to deal with 3,000 people. They had to figure out on day one, what do we do with these 3,000 people that just said, we want to be the church, we want to be a part of who Jesus is. And it tells us that what they did was they just turned around and did what they'd been trained to do, how God had told them to do church. They said they met in the temple courts, and then they met house to house. And Acts 2:42-47 describes what that looked like, that they interacted around the word, but they were so much in each other's lives, and they so much shared life together and walked with each other, that everybody who saw them said, I want to be a part of that, and they added to the church daily. It's, it tells us, in fact, Jesus had said that was going to happen, right? Before he died, the night before he died, when he said, I got a new commandment for you. I want you all to love one another, just like I've loved you for the last 3 years. I want you to love one another. And then he goes on to say, because that's how they're going to know you're my follower. How are they going to know you're a follower of Christ? By the way you interact with each other. The picture to the world isn't going to be what you teach or the flyers that you make or the building that you build. It's going to be how you live with each other. And so it tells us in Acts, they did it in such a way that people came every day and said, we want to be a part of whatever you're doing. I don't understand it, but I want to be a part of it. And we know that story. We know that story since, you know, especially here in America, we know that story because, in you know, the most of our schools were built by churches in the beginning. Most of our hospitals were built by churches in the beginning, right? That it was how they were living together and how they were making life better around them everywhere. That they continued to build, and that's the story of how. When you look at the New Testament, it's funny some of the things we do in the church versus, you know, kind of what we're taught. You think about communion, which is very important, you know, but there's probably less than a chapter or teaching between what Jesus said and what Paul said. There's probably less than about a chapter of teaching on how to do communion, right? But we, you know, or you think about baptism, and there's definitely less than a chapter on how to do baptism. But letter after letter after letter and word after word from Jesus talked about how to live with each other in the church, how to do life together with each other in the church, because that's the church. So, you know, this is the church. And in fact, from Acts 2, we go back to Acts 5, several, and we see them again. They were in the temple courts and house to house. And there's some things you can do only in the temple courts. One of the joys of being a big church is to think about the majesty of 1,000 people worshiping God at the same time on the weekend. Where else can you have that kind of, you know, and certainly there's churches bigger than ours, but it doesn't matter if you're a church of 100 or a church of 1,000 or a church of 10,000, just the people of the same mind together at the same time worshiping is just an amazing thing to be a part of. The teaching that you can get, you know, from being together, the ability to draw people together. But of all of those one another's, because that's what was in all those letters, right? How to love one another, care for one another, be in each other's lives, how to carry each other's burdens, how to confess our sins to each other, how over and over again, of all those one another's, I can't figure out how to do any of them sitting in a row looking at your back on Sunday morning. They all happen in an environment where we're together in each other's lives, growing with some people that I get to practice now on what it looks like to carry each other's burdens, and I can practice on what it means to you know, be there and confess sins to each other, and with some people who care enough about me that you're not hopefully not going to judge me when I mess it up. But that's where we do those one another's, and so in such a way that people grow, and not only do we grow together in our spiritual life, we can hold each other accountable as that happens. We can react and interact around what we're learning in on Sundays, but there's no where else can you walk out what you're learning together in an environment? And that's been even church history. When the New Testament comes to a close, but we know what happened, that it was shortly after that no one could meet in temple courts anymore. Because to do that meant you were going to be drug away, and you were going to be persecuted, and you were going to be beaten, or you might even be killed all through the church world from then. So from the end of the New Testament till about, 350, 360 AD, there were no temple courts. People met in houses, circles, just like this. Maybe even in a cave somewhere. But when they wrote to the Church of Corinth, they were writing to what we believe now was about 25 groups of people meeting in homes of about 15 to 25 people. Because to do otherwise would have gotten killed. But this is how the church grew until the day that Constantine, you know, decided till the emperor decided he became a Christian, and then he said, you know what, I've Christianity thing. We should have those same buildings all the other religions do. And the next thing you know, we were all living in buildings and doing church in a very different way. But this was church. This is, you know, when Jesus said, "I'll build my church," he said what he was saying was, "I'll build my gathering of people." That's really what the word meant. You know, when you think about that. So we think that this, and we've learned that this is an environment where people grow together. This is an environment actually God probably meant for us to grow, because we were so designed to be in his image, community, that we were so taught by Jesus to this is how we grow, that we found that, you know, that we would wanted to do discipleship in this context with 15, you know, 12 to 15 people in a small group doing life together. Based and centered on God's word? Absolutely. But we joke around here because people always come and go, where are your Bible studies? We want to be in a Bible study. And I'll tell folks, you know, just to get their attention and understand the picture, I'll say, we don't have Bible studies. We have Bible doing groups. We don't have Bible study groups. Because most people in the church have a picture of what a Bible study is like, and I just want to interrupt that picture and say, What we're doing is life together. We're pursuing a relationship with Jesus Christ. We're pursuing a relationship with each other, doing as one another's together. And we're trying to change the world out of that in a relationship with those that aren't in the church yet. And that's what we're doing in a small group, and that's how we would judge the health of a small group, is we would say, are you growing in all three of those relationships? Is life growing? So that's the why. Why? Because we think we're created that way. And the other piece of the why for us is that it's just proven itself to be the best environment we've seen for life change, for people to actually grow and continue to grow and be in the lives of some folks. And it breaks down even beyond to this, to go, to take a group of 15 or 12 that sit like this, and to know that, you know, that maybe two or three of you would get together and decide to take it to another level and meet beyond the group experience. But when we talk about what a healthy group is, and that's, we talk about that all the time around here, what's a healthy group look like? One of the things about a healthy group that's really important for us is we say, we measure the in-between meeting factor, the IBM factor, to say, we know healthy groups are so in each other's lives that it's not just Tuesday night or Thursday night that you meet together, but you're doing life together. So maybe two guys who are having breakfast on Fridays to mentor each other, to study the word even further. Maybe, you know, if it's a group of families, we're going to see you at Centennial Park on a regular basis out there just together because you're doing life together. And for us, so that here primarily at Grace, discipleship and pastoral care happen in small groups. If I'm sick, I'm in the hospital, I'm likely to wake up and see not Pastor Mark or even me standing there first, but my small group around me, praying for me, meeting my needs, taking care of the things that are going on. That's kind of the way that it works, and that's the why for it behind us.
Great. Any questions?
So you're saying around 15 to 12 to 15 people in each group?
You know, it
in general.
In general. I mean, we've learned that there's capacity issues for some. You know, we have young adults who said, I can't get more than 8 people in my living room where I am, and that's good. That, you know, that's fine. We have some people who have capacity for bigger groups than that. What we suggest is if you have a group that's bigger than this, or in fact even this size, that you break off into smaller sections and that you... But so we started with this philosophy. I mean, actually, Grace started as with small groups early on. But when I came on board, we had this small group ministry that was on the side. And it was good to be in that if you wanted to. And you could be in the worship team if you wanted to. And it was a part of what was going on. But we decided at that point that we wanted to do ministry. We wanted to do discipleship. We wanted to do pastoral care through small groups. So that meant for us two important things that have become the mission statement for our small group ministry now. That meant that if it was going to work, if you're going to do pastoral care and know how everybody's growing spiritually, then you've actually got to have everybody in a group, right? Otherwise, what do you do? You know, so that meant that we needed to figure out how to get everybody in a group, and then we needed to make sure that every group was an environment that was doing well. So we say that our mission is to get every person in the Grace community connected to a healthy small group. Two things for us: every person connected and every group healthy. And that's kind of like what we look at the mission in the spiritual formation is, how do we get every person in a group, and how do we get every group to be, make sure that every group is healthy. So we've gone from, and we measure who's in a group, how many people are in a group, not by numbers, because that keeps changing. We keep growing. So if I told you, you know, I could have 400 people in a group, and that's amazing if my church is 350 people, or that's really sad if my church is 4,000 people, right? So that doesn't tell me anything. We measure success in the every you know, everybody in the group based on how many people come here on Sunday, because that will continue to change. And we say, what percentage of the amount of people worshiping with us on Sunday, adults, since that's what we're measuring is adults at the point. So of the adults worshiping with us on Sunday, what percentage of those are in a small group? Because that's the one number we know. I don't know about you guys, but you've asked several times how many people, how many members are at Grace, or how many people, and honestly, I don't know how to tell you that. Because we have people that, you know, say they come to church every other week. We have people that come once a month, and they would say they're at Grace. We have some people that we're going to see in 2 weeks at Christmas, and we'll see them again at Easter, and they say they're, you know, that this is their church. So how do you say how many people would say, Grace is my church? We can estimate that. But what I do know is how many people sit in those seats every Sunday, because we count that. Our ushers count, so we know. So we wanted to work with a number we knew every week, so that when we would say, here's how we're doing, we weren't just doing like good evangelistic pastors and making it up. We were actually saying. So we started, when I started 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, we had about 18% of our weekend attendance in small groups. So if there were, say, if there were 100 people attending, it was more back then, but if there were 100 people attending, then 18 people were in groups. There were 236. And we went through lots of stages over the last 10 years of growth, and then doing this and figuring out, okay, that we don't do something else, it's not going to change. So we do something else, and it would grow some more and grow some more till the number, to where a couple of years ago, we finally reached the place where we have more people meeting during the week in small groups than we have meeting here in the worship center. And today, as of now, we have 107% of our worship attendance in small groups. So that's how we're working on it. But that's not good enough for me, because that's not everybody. And that means that some people could be, you know, from our neighborhoods and all kinds of different stuff. But that's not everybody. Because like we said, everybody doesn't come to church every week, right? So we know there's more than whatever the number is sitting in there tonight and tomorrow they call Grace home. I want that number to be 135% in the next couple of years, and then even grow from there. But at least it gives us something to know how we're doing and where we are. How do you know how many people are in your church or in your small groups?
So normally how you form the group? The naturally group together, or you organized?
We've gone through so many different ways of doing that since we started. And what I learned was, part of how that we would level off for a while at 35% and just, you know, and go, if I keep doing everything the same way, I'm never going to get past 35%. So we would then create a new way to get people into groups, or find out what it was we were doing that was keeping somebody out of getting into groups and try and fix that. So we started with one way, and now I'd say we have several ways. There's two primary ways. One is we launch brand new groups two or three times a year. Brand new. Just, you aren't in a group, you want to get in a group, come. We do this what we call group link. And we do it at night, bring everybody together who wants to be in a group, and have this experience where that starts a new group. We actually do it with a starter curriculum that they do for the first 8 weeks to learn how to be in a group, to get to know each other. So that's one way we launch. Brand new people, brand new groups. Then we have ways that you can get...
Brand new people, but do you have another person to lead them, or do you choose a group leader among them?
Yes.
You ask me, is it choose it among them?
That was two questions. Yes to both questions. It's an environment that allows a lot of things to happen. Somebody, we could have trained up leaders that you know, can then start a group. We can have somebody from a group who said, okay, our group got too big for my living room, so what we would like to do is we're gonna become two groups, we're going to multiply into two, or we're going to multiply into three groups, and we'd like to come to Group Link and get some new people to populate those three groups. Or we a vast majority of those groups start, and that night they choose from the circle, after we spend an hour getting to know each other, hearing each other's spiritual story and why you want to be in a group and why it's important, how'd you come to meet Christ and all those things. They actually choose their leader that night. It's a little radical, but it works really well. We've been doing it for 8 years now, and it's been eight or nine actually now. And it works really well. It means then we take those leaders and train them starting that night through a training process that's very intensive to begin with. Because if you're going to choose leaders like that, then you've got to have a pretty forefront heavy kind of thing. So Group Link could be either. You can come and say, I'm a leader, and I got a couple of couples who want to start a group, so can we come and get some other people? Then we have a way to work that out and make sure that works. Or we can come and go, I'm just got here and I want to be in a group with some, and so we will put, you know, four, five, six, seven couples together, or singles or mixed or whatever together, all from one neighborhood, and they figure out who their leader is going to be that night. And when we start groups at Group Link, it's you make one commitment, whether you become the leader or you're going to be in the group. That commitment is, I will stay in this group for 8 weeks, period. This is a group that's going to meet for 8 weeks. And then at the end of that 8 weeks, you as a group will decide whether you continue or not. So you're only making a commitment for 8 weeks for this study, period. It's okay. and I don't know about what you guys find in your culture. I've found in Howard County, 8 weeks for people sounds like a lifetime. So to think that somebody would actually come in and make a commitment for a year or two to a group is just, I don't know, ridiculous now. So I reduced it to something that hopefully is, you know, a handle. Now, I will tell you that we started that, doing things that way in GroupLink, thinking that, my thinking was, if at the end of 8 weeks, 50% of those groups continue, that's a huge win. Because if I launched, the first time I did this, we had 18 groups. We had eight leaders in 18 groups, which represented about 225, 230 people. And so I thought, if 100, you know, and 15 of these, 120 of these people go on, that's 120 new people I put into groups. And that's amazing. We ended that, and all 18 groups decided to go on. And all of them went on for over a year. And in fact, I'm just talking to one now. That was 9.5 years ago. I'm just talking to one now that's ending, that started with that first group. I did it again. We did it again, 18 more groups. And all of those 18 groups went on beyond a year and stayed. The batting record now is somewhere between 95 and 97% of all the groups we started in the last 9.5 years have continued to be at least a year old after the choice and the ability to end. And even, we, you know, so if you're a member of that group and you decide, okay, I gave you the 8 weeks that you asked for, but Thursday night just doesn't work for me. The group chose Thursday and that doesn't work. I need to be in Tuesday. Or that woman in the group is just driving me nuts. I can't, for whatever reason, we'll still help you get in another group. But even that number of people who come out in a given year of doing GroupLink, where we connect, this year we connected about 380 people through GroupLink in the new groups. And this year we had 7 people at the end go and be in different groups over the whole course of the year. So even that has been, and I don't explain that other than the Holy Spirit. I don't have any explanation other than the Holy Spirit. But that's one way you get into groups. You can come up to the table. Well, you pass the GroupLink table as we came in the door. It's the first thing you pass when you came in the door in the lobby. You come to the GroupLink table. We're there after every service. You just go, I want to be in a group. And we have a list of any groups that have told us in the last 2 or 3 weeks, we'd love to have somebody new come be a part of us. We've got openings. We want people to come. We're open to the church just sending us some folks. So send us who you want. We'll come be a part of that. After every service, we connect, you know, a bunch of people into groups that have openings. So you can get connected into an existing group because it's in your neighborhood, or it's the right age range, or they meet on the right night, or whatever that looks like. And you can go, that same information is on our website. The website's called gracegroups.net. That same information about which groups are open right now and the registration for that are available on there as well. I should probably tell you about our three kinds of groups that we have for, we have all kinds of groups. The other thing is, we have all kinds of groups. How do you get everybody in your church connected? You have all kinds of groups, right? Because there's all kinds of different places. We have a men's ministry that meets on Monday nights. And that, it actually has all kinds of facets to it, but one of its things it does is meets on Monday nights. And it's based in small groups. So every Monday night you can come here and be a part of this men's ministry, have a Monday night, and then you're going to be part of a small group that you'll begin with that night. And they meet together every Monday. From then, we have a women's ministry that meets every Tuesday morning and every Tuesday night, small group based. So those are the only two that meet on campus. The men's ministry used to be, just like the women's ministry, they were seasonal. They only met in the fall and the spring. They had two sessions. Now the men's ministry this year has started going full-time every Monday night. The women's ministry is still seasonal. And so you come and it's fall and it's spring. So you can get it. That's one type of small group that you could have. We talked about Starting Point that meets in here for folks who, you know, who are beginning the journey and have questions. As you end Starting Point and you're ready, say, with the assumption that you made a decision for Christ, and now you got to figure out, well, I always say the thing you learn in Starting Point is that it's about a relationship. In fact, it's the number one thing that most people say at the end of it. It's about, I didn't know it was about a relationship. I knew religion, I knew rules, I knew growing up in church. I didn't know it was about a relationship. So that's what you learn in Starting Point. And we have a group called Foundations. Foundations goes on for about half a year, a little more. Meets in homes. It's a teaching environment. Andy's with us. He's actually visiting us from Colorado. He's a pastor there. He's been here. He's teaching our men today. He's going to be teaching our... He was had lunch with some of our young adults. He's going to be back teaching our men Monday night. I was just sharing with them about Mondays, how we got Monday environment for men. So these folks are all from... from Columbia Chinese Church. And, we're talking small groups. So Foundations is designed for... you may still not have made a decision for Christ yet, or you may have recently made a decision, or you might have been a Christian for a long time, but you just want to understand the foundations better. You want a strong foundation for your relationship with Christ. And we go through that time. It's a teaching environment, usually led by teachers, but it's small group. It's small group in somebody's home. And we look at the foundation, the truth, you know, of the Bible, but in context to how they relate to being in a relationship with Jesus. So we're going to learn how to pray, and what does that really mean? And we're going to learn how to study the Bible so that we can find what Jesus wants for us in that. We're going to talk about all the things that you would imagine. We're going to talk about the Holy Spirit, but what difference does that make to my life now that I have a relationship with Jesus? We'll talk about the end times and all the things that are going to happen then. But what difference does that make to me now and how I'm going to walk out my life and be in a relationship with Jesus? So Foundations is sort of that piece that comes after Starting Point. And then we have what we call Grace Groups, and that's our core for our small groups. And there's hundreds of those that are meeting all over the area. And that's people doing what we talked about, you know, the three relationships, figuring out how to pursue the relationship with Christ, how to live in with each other as the church, you know, as we engage each other as the church, and how to impact the world, our community, and the world together. And that's how we would say what a healthy Grace Group is doing. If you're healthy, that you're going to be doing all three of those things as well, in context. So, that answer your question?
Can you give us an example? How do you conduct a group of meetings?
How a typical group meeting?
Yeah.
That's good. Most, you know, every group meeting may be a little different, but there's some elements that are the same in all of them. And those elements are there's fellowship, there's interacting around the word, and there's prayer. So I would tell every new group leader in Group Leader 101 that those three things exist, because it's really connecting with each other, and connecting with God's word, and connecting, you know, really connecting with God in regards to a typical meeting if you're going to do it in a group. So fellowship, you know, well, we're all Christians, so right, we understand that fellowship always seems to have some food involved at some level. And for our groups, it can be any kind of different. It could be from, soda and chips to many of our groups decide to have a meal together every time they meet. I try to visit those groups the most often. That's where the happening is. But I'm amazed because we have some family groups that are bring your kids and I'll be the group. And so I know this one group that there's 22 kids amongst, maybe five couples. And they eat dinner together every week they meet. And that just sounds like such a chore. but they love it. They keep going, no, it's easier for us to feed all the kids and be together than it is to figure out how to do that outside of here. But it's really designed around, you know, being each other's lives. What's going on? What are what's the week look like? Fellowship can happen at the beginning, at the end, in the middle, whatever that. You know, but it might be that's how you begin. And then there's a time, usually, most of our small groups go meet for about 2 hours. And about at least 45 minutes to an hour of that is interacting in some way around God's Word. And for most Grace groups, we don't ask the leaders to be teachers. We ask them to be shepherds at most in regards to what they do. We ask them to be folks who are, you know, that you're walking in your own walk with Christ and that you're taking people with you. That you're intentional about being a discipler, but you don't have to be a teacher. Because we just found God didn't give enough people the gift of teaching in the church, at least the way we found, to be able to minister to everybody, to have a teacher in every small group. So what we do is find different ways to provide the teaching ourselves, and for the point of the group is to interact around that teaching, to ask the question, if this is true, then how do I need to change my life to reflect the gospel, to reflect what I've learned, to take the next step? And any of us can ask that question, because we ask it of ourselves every day. So how do we do that, and then and have that conversation in a room with people just like this. That's the real interacting around God's Word. So that could look all kinds of different ways. It could be a video teaching from a lot of great video, you know, a lot of great teachers that are around the country now, that you can decide, we're going to do this series, and we're going to do a series on prayer, and it's going to be a series that, you know, by Andy Stanley, or by John Piper, or by anybody that you could bring in teaching that way. And it's it could be, the teaching could actually come from here. In fact, we often will do series where we interact around what the message is on the weekend, and we take that to a whole new level for in small groups. For fall, for instance, we do something called a campaign, and that's for two reasons. One, as a church together, we can move forward in an area that we really, the elders and the pastors have decided is important for us as a church to move forward together. And we'll do that all together as a church. So we're teaching about it on the weekend, they're teaching about it over in the youth department, and we're learning about the same thing in small groups, really interacting and asking, what's it mean now to walk that out in my life? And what are some steps we can take? And now I can actually come back next week and go, you know, you can look at me and go, well, Michael, did you take those steps that we talked about last week? Did you do that stuff that we, you know, we can hold each other accountable as we do that. Or we can, you know, a group can decide for this series, I'm just going to follow along. Mark's going to be our teaching, or Mitchell's going to be the teaching that happens on the weekend will be our teaching. We'll process how to live that out and apply it in our lives as followers in small group. There's all kinds of different ways. There's obviously small group studies that you can do. And we even teach our leaders how, if you want, you can open the Word, read this chapter, and come up with five or six great questions that will be piercing and impactful in your lives and in the lives, and build a teaching around that without you having to teach, let the Word teach while you really work out application. And then the last piece of that is prayer. And we always say that that's kind of where we really, you know, set aside a time that we're going to interact with God. And I encourage group leaders to make that look as differently as you can every time you do it, because it can teach folks how to pray. We've found that so many people are uncomfortable praying in public. Public can be this being public. And so we've come up with a lot of ways to help people get past that and learn to really just pray and interact and be in an environment where that's happening with folks on a regular basis. And so we can work that into it. And then the other piece that doesn't happen in the meeting, sometimes the logistics of it do, is that we desire every group to be involved in that third relationship, the impact the world. You know, that if Christ is changing our lives, then we are going to turn out and do the Great Commission and be people who are telling the world and doing that in ways that we're really involved in our community. So we teach and know that every group is working towards being involved, both in our community, for our community, that's Howard County, and in the world. So that could be for us. We have some specific areas we work as a church, but that could be Africa, that could be China, that could be... In fact, since you and I met last time, we have officially made China a focus area of our missions ministry.
That's great.
So we have we used to be all over the world and found out that just didn't work. We could only go shallow in a bunch of areas. So we decided to go deep in four or five, and so we're working with those four or five. And we had some opportunities come available in China that just was God moving and saying, that's one of the places we want you to be. So last month the elders decided China is going to be one of our focus areas. So is that a good picture for what it might look like to meet one night a week in an environment?
So that group normally happens at home and in the living room?
Yes. For us, it's for a couple of reasons. One, it's the environment that's really the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. It's so much better environment for connection, for authentic life that's going to happen. We're really going to be in each other's lives. We're going to be in each other's homes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it, you know, really means. The other part of that is it would just be impossible for us, you know, to probably not when we started, but today it would be impossible. I was talking to our church administrator Thursday and said, how many more square feet we have at Grace Church off of this campus than we do on, if you start putting every living room together that we're meeting in. We have way more building space outside of this campus than we do inside. If we had to build the building for all our small groups to meet, they would be
be expensive and huge.
A couple questions. One is that you did not mention worship during the group meeting. Do you usually do the worship, sing the songs, or you don't talk about it?
We absolutely talk about it. Every group sort of deals with worship differently.
Okay.
Some are very comfortable and, you know, have folks that are gifted musically.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about worship in a broader context of what worship means scripturally, you know, altogether. So we know that worship, the musical part of worship that we do, the singing and stuff, is a piece of worship. You know, when we look at the biblical definition of worship, we know it's us responding to what God has done in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really us surrendering to what God's done in our lives. We talk about Romans 12:1 and really look at when it says, you know, to offer our bodies as living sacrifices, which is our reasonable act of worship.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about worship, we talk about any time that you and I respond to what God's doing in our lives. So it's actually worship to say grace, you know, and give thanks before meal. That's really honoring Him. It's worship when we stop at work before a difficult decision or a tough meeting or, you know, and actually bring Him into the equation and pray and ask for, you know, that's worship. That it's worship any time we say, God, I choose Your way over my way, that's really responding and surrendering to what He's doing. And that when, you know, a group of people, whether it's this size or 1,000, come together and say, I'm going to offer my musical ability and my hands and my, you know, in honor to who You are by singing and doing that's worship too. But that all of that's a piece. So worship is a big component of what we do in all of those areas. And then many of our groups would have somebody, you know, might have a guitar or might have, you know, have an environment where worship plays a significant part. Sometimes we'll have groups come together, two or three will come together and have a time of worship. Our young adults, they actually do now what they come together once a month, where as many small groups that want to come together on a Friday night. And they have a big worship component that includes music and everything to go together. That's an augmentation. Like I said, we do lots of things alongside our groups or to augment them. And that's one way our young adult ministry augments our young adult groups.
A couple of more questions was related to how do you put the small group of ministry along with other ministry? For example, we have once a night prayer meeting, we have some Sunday school classes, and you know, we have fellowship groups. So, I mean, how do you do it?
The important question for us, and for me usually, is what is it you hope for groups to do?
Mm-hmm.
You got to have the big picture of what do we want small groups to do, you know? Because like we said, there are some things that are Bible studies, stuff like a class, and that has a reason. It's important to have class where you learn the Bible and can do that. It's important to have that environment. But for us, that's not a small group. That's not what we call a small group. That's
mm-hmm.
that's a sort of a class environment. Mm-hmm. There's a place for fellowship groups, you know. Our young adults get together for fellowship. Our guys do that. Some of our, you know, they have fellowship groups. And that's biblical and that's important. But we would say that's not a small group. But all of those kind of exist alongside small groups. And what we, now because we want to deliver discipleship through small group environment, we ask the question often, are we doing things that are fighting that?
Mm-hmm.
Are we creating something that's sending a different message than that? Have we created an event on a regular night every week that we're saying, we want you to be a part of that, and is that fighting the fact that we want people to be in groups? Is it making it harder? So I think that most people at Grace at this point would say they know that if I'm a part of Grace, I church is here on the weekends and church is in somebody's home during the week in a small group. But that's kind of the first, you know. But then there's other things that I need. So a man might be involved in our men's ministry because they're, you know, wrestling with men's issues or want to be connected with men. And that's sort of in addition. I might go to a class that's going to teach me how to study the Word or an apologetics class or what, but that's kind of in addition, and we're careful when we create things like that we try and create them to augment groups. So let it be an environment that's easy for you to bring your small group to. Create it as an environment that for folks that aren't in small group, it actually makes it easy for them to get in a group at the end. So if you're doing an 8-week study on apologetics, I'm going to say that because we were about to do that in January. What are the things you can do in that study to help folks get towards a group in the end? So we're going to do some things like, we're going to have groups come
We're going to create environments while it's going on that will help people who are not in a group connect with the ones that are, and maybe for a period of time they'll be in that group as they go through those 8 weeks. Chances are then they're going to stick in that group once it's over, right? That they're probably going to go, when that group goes back home to homes, you know, after 8 weeks, they're probably going to stay there. Or if there's somebody, you know, eight people that come together and aren't in groups, maybe they'll want to form a group. So when we begin to look at some of those things that we're working alongside, how are we helping those folks to get into community environment where you're going to really learn and grow the most? Sunday school is an amazing environment. I grew up in a Baptist church, so I know I know Sunday school. And I don't know, where I grew up in most Baptist churches, there was always the one Sunday school group that was just amazing. You know, that everybody wanted to be in that one Sunday school group. And if you weren't in that one, you were always like, oh, those are the ones that you really want to be in. But what you learn is that there's some amazing things you can do in Sunday school before church on, you know, the hour before, but there are some things that you can only do in a home environment where you're really in each other's lives that's another step. It doesn't mean that Sunday school has to go away. In fact, maybe you can even, your Sunday school ministry can learn from your small group ministry. I when we came here, there, like I told you, there was a small group ministry that existed. But some of the things that we were doing, like the way we were launching groups, that was different. The way what we were asking a small group to be from then on was going to be different. And I didn't endeavor to actually change those groups that existed. We worked to just really create something that was going to be biblical and hopefully so inviting that they would at least want to explore and see if it was something that they would want to be a part of or want to do. And so some of them looked and said, wait, that's a better environment than what I'm in right now. Can we come be a part of that? What's it look like for our, you know? And over the course of several years, most of them, you know, came over. But I didn't spend a lot of time trying to go say, okay, now this is what we're doing for small groups now. You need to change. We just created that, made it as appealing as we could, and made it easy for them to come over if they wanted.
And try to figure out what's the difference between a fellowship group and a small group. And the reason is that, based on what you just described, you have the worship, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have prayer, you have a fellowship, and then you have some teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the major difference I heard is that you try to definitely get connected to each other, help each other to grow, and then another mission is to reach out. Then our fellowship, I think we haven't done the most of the same thing. I'm trying to figure out how we're going to transition our fellowship group, or if we want to into this small group,
mm-hmm.
What kind of similarity or what kind of differences we can make a transformation of fellowship become more like a cell group a small group type, so we can even benefit the whole church. I think it's we have been asking right now. We have how many five fellowship groups in our church?
And so you're saying, excuse me, I'm going to grab some water. If anybody wants any, just please feel free to jump up and grab some. Don't be informed very much. But so you're saying some of those elements already exist, right?
Right. Yeah. I think you guys can tell me a little bit about, and we have a couple of fellowship leaders here.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is what they have been leading the group right now. Okay. And mm-hmm. the leader of each fellowship group is kind of usually in shepherding. They might necessarily do a teaching, they might ask somebody, brother or sister to do the teaching or. So it's pretty much the same thing, and they help each other, they for each other. So right now, because we try to kind of start this kind of small group,
mm-hmm.
so we try to see what's the differences or how we can enhance our existing structure,
right,
and make it more, extended.
Well, yeah, if your existing groups are mm-hmm. close to what you want, then it's a matter of just adding the elements that are missing that you want to be a part of that. Now, the way we talk about that here, we have lots of groups. What we've learned is whatever the leader is strong in is what the group is going to be strong in most of the time. And if you don't figure out how to work around that, and I'll talk to you about how we've learned to work around that. But if the leader is somebody who's very relational and very fellowship-oriented and loves to be with people, then your group is going to be strong when it comes to fellowship. And maybe not as strong when it comes to outreach or or getting into the Word or actually pursuing that relationship with Christ. If you've got somebody who loves the Word or loves to pursue their relationship with Christ, you're going to see the group probably lean that way. So when we describe health of a group here, we actually describe it as a balance of those things we've been talking about today, of the elements that are part of a group. We describe it as a balance. Now, today we actually talk about it as a balance of those three relationships, because for our church, that's how we describe discipleship, is pursuing Christ, engaging each other, impacting the world. And we would say a healthy follower of Christ has a balance of those three relationships in their lives. So, and so does a healthy small group. So it, then as we have a conversation with a group or group leader to decide what's health look like, it's easy to say, to understand, oh, that group is really good at engaging each other. They're in each other's lives. They're doing stuff together all the time. In fact, they do stuff together so much all the time, and they have such a fellowship time that they don't often get to the Word. That sometimes they don't find, you know, that the night's over and they forgot to stick in the DVD or have the discussion or open the Bible or, you know. And so they may be great at the one. They actually may even go out and serve together. They all head down to the Helping Up mission together, you know, twice a month, or they all, you know, they've all been to East Africa together and they're part of that, but they don't always get to the Word. So we would say that group isn't healthy. Because it's not a, you know, there's a missing piece of that. Often you'll have a group that's great about the Word. They get in the Word, they stay there for all 2 hours. They're going to study the Word, they're going to, you know.
So if that's not healthy, how as a minister, how you transform this group into your?
Well, the first thing is you decide what health looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, that it's that balance. You cast that vision often. We have discussions, whether I'm having it with my senior leaders who lead small group leaders, or I'm teaching a group of small group leaders from the very first day they're becoming small group leaders, or I'm having a training with them that we have twice a year. I'm always talking about what a healthy small group looks like. Always talking about the elements so that I don't have to go, you know, your group is really bad because you don't have anything you're doing where you're reaching out of the group. That's not what I want to say. I want to cast the vision. What I want to do is have your group come share how you do outreach and what it looks like and how robust it is. So you will go, I need to add that to my group. I'm missing that healthy piece. So we talk about health so that it's easy to recognize it if it's missing in your environment. And then as we talk about it, to say, okay, if I'm missing that piece, then here's the next 4 steps I need to make to add that piece to it. So it really is casting a vision of what it looks like to be healthy, kind of like, you know.
Sometimes if a group is together and a lot of fellowships and they bond each other very tight. And just like what you say, they're busy with all the fellowships and forgot, you know, the God words. It's perhaps gradually that group will begin to, you know, have some other things. Not that spiritual. But in this way, even some seniors, they saw this problem, but they want to, how to guide. Normally, the group, they are bonded so tight, so strong that you even couldn't influence them, because they are thinking, you know, they're gathering, they were active with help in the church activities, and, it's happened.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a couple of things that we do to try. And I'll also tell you that Jesus had the same problem. He told lots of folks how we should live, and even told folks about what it was like to follow. And some of them turned around and walked the other way. And that's just a piece of ministry that you have to realize, is that, you know, folks are going to always listen. So do you have some groups? But there's lots of different ways that you can help folks see health and influence it. And so we got a couple things we do. We actually have a health assessment that we offer to groups to say, hey, how about once every 6 months, just sit down as a group and spend a night taking this assessment. It's not the be-all, end-all to whether you're healthy. We're not trying to check a box and go healthy or not. We're trying to help you think about what's the best next steps for us to take. So all the questions are designed to fit in those three relationships that we talked about. And at the end, you have a real idea of sort of a, you know, score. We're pretty good here. We're not so good there. And then have the conversation as a group and go, where do we need to work on the most? And so maybe then you come away and you go, you know what? We did really good on this fellowship thing. Boy, we got scored off the chart. But when it comes to the Word and comes to pursuing our relationship with Christ, we're not doing that great. What should we do? Well, then we provide the answer to that. So once you've done your health assessment, we would say, for the next 4 months, how about you work on the area that you found the weakest? And to help you do that, actually, we have our website set up in such a way that you can go and just go right to Pursuing Christ, which is one of those relationships, and here's 30 studies that other groups have done that they love, that they said really helped them take steps in that area, and maybe even here's a handful of activities you could do. But just decide as a group, for the next 4 months, this is what we're going to work on, and this is how we're going to work on it. So it actually then helps somebody in that, a group in that environment, to recognize where the weakness is, and then to have some clear next steps. We even put our next steps in the stage of crawl, walk, and run steps. So if I'm really, this is way too deep for me to think about doing this, here's just a crawl step. Decide I'm going to take a crawl step. And you can do that. Those health assessments are for individuals and for groups. And then every group leader has a small group coach working alongside them. So they're, when they meet together and have conversations about how, you know, the leader's doing spiritually and how the group's doing spiritually, they're gonna encourage them to do that same thing, encourage them to think about the areas that they need to work on. They're going to have conversations that are about what's going really well in the group, and to celebrate those things that are doing really well. But they're also going to have conversations about where do you think, you know, the group needs the biggest help. So that they're going to have somebody they can, a small group leader, can bounce ideas off of or bounce problems off of and get answers to as well. So those two pieces for us hopefully help push somebody who might normally not want to change into an opportunity. Now, if you just decide you're not going to change, you know, there's nobody that's going to change you. But we've found a lot of success with some of those things.
Question. For the small group, you mentioned they had to commit for at least 8 weeks first. Mm-hmm. And do you force them to meet once a week? Or once a month, or once every other week?
A starter group for sure meets every week. That's 8 weeks with us, with actually a curriculum that they're using all the time. Mm-hmm. And then we encourage all of our groups to meet every week. Only because, again, because of the connection that we're hoping to have, because of this really being in the life of each other, we think it's important. I can identify the groups that meet every other week, and meet every week without you telling me who they are, by just watching how much they're in each other's lives and how connected they are, and whether they're just a study or a group together. So we really encourage folks to meet every week. I would, heaven forbid, don't tell anybody else, but I would encourage them to meet as a small group every week is more important than being in the worship center every week. If you're going to choose whether you're going to be in your group every week or you're going to go to church every week, choose to be in your group every week.
Okay, because our church current situation is probably 50% of the fellowship meet once a month, and then 50% meet every other week, and none of them meet
every week.
I think none of them, right?
No. Yeah. No. I think that's a way to change. You know, we'll probably start with.
Well, yeah. Sort of the test. It's sort of the hey, let's the begin a group this way. Gives them an opportunity to see what the advantages of meeting every week are. You actually realize within a couple of months, it's like in an environment like Starting Point here, when they get done with 10 weeks of Starting Point, I can barely pry them away from each other. We used to end Starting Point and send them all to Group Link, and they would end up going into different groups. And they would so beg me to stay together as a group somehow and continue to meet, that we finally created a bridge that took you from Starting Point to Foundations, because these people who met together every week didn't want to think about not meeting together every week ever again. So if you can create a compelling experience that happens for just 2 months together, mm-hmm. then you don't have to sell it anymore.
Okay,
the
question is, usually they meet like during the weekdays or during the weekends?
Yes. That's what we found is it works best for some people on the weekdays and some best on the weekends. It's just different. You know, we have some that meet in the afternoons. We had some groups that decided when we started Saturday services, they loved it, and they meet Saturday before service or they meet Saturday after service at somebody's home. We've got a few groups now that have decided to meet Sunday after the second service. They all go grab food and meet at somebody's house together, you know, once they get there. People, and I just say that to say, they found what works for them worked. So, you know, so now you can find a group any night of the week at Grace that's meeting somewhere, you know. I did have somebody ask me, did we have any groups that met in the middle of the night one time? How many groups that meet? Because 3 a.m. is kind of my best, the only time I got any time. I'm like, well, you're going to kind of be meeting by yourself then. I said, I know a church around the world that actually has some online groups that meet. Kids end up that time, but.
How about a kid? Like, are they like a really small group? It's a couple of families? Maybe, I remember last time you mentioned probably like a husband go with this A group and wife go with the B group and the kids maybe go to another group. Is that part of the problem? Or, you know, it's kind of like, to me, I know, you know, each family has different schedules.
Have you seen kind of difficulties? When it comes to childcare, number one difficulty in every small group ministry across the country is you know, when you talk to any small group pastor and go, childcare, they all go, ugh. Just because it's such an equation now with people's schedules and lifestyles and sports. But what, again, I tell you is we have all kinds of answers to that. And we have groups, that we call family groups, and that's, family groups are specifically bring all your kids because we're doing something with them at the group too kind of groups. They fill up immediately. I can't keep enough of those going. So in those environments, it's families coming together, bringing all their kids, taking care of those kids somehow is a part of the equation, all together at that same place. Then we have groups that the kids aren't necessarily a part of the equation, so they're being cared for somehow. And groups decide on their own here at Grace how they're going to do that. So they may decide, we're going to rotate one couple out every week, and they're going to take care of the kids. We're going to all go together as a group, and we're going to hire a babysitter, and they're going to take care of the kids. We're going to drop all the kids over at somebody's house who's going to babysit them on the way to group, and that's all going to happen off-site. We're all going to take care of babysitting our childcare ourselves at our own home. That's on everybody. The group's not going to take care of it. Every group that has families figure out a different way to do that. But like you said, some families are having weird schedules where they're, you know, the husband may be in men's fraternity, and depending on the age of the kids, if you know, all of our teenagers are in a group themselves. So what I found is where most of our D teams meet on Tuesday night, there are some parents who are going, I need a group on Tuesday night so I can drop my kids off at D team and then go be in that small group and come pick them back up, and we try and figure out ways to work it out. But it's, you know, so yeah, the church deals with the very same problems everybody else is dealing with when it comes to families, especially young families, and how to make that work.
So in your church, your main job is to worship Sunday and also take care of the different groups, right? So you provide the contents and information for those groups. Are you going to decide this group? Are you going to study this kind of information, or they are going to choose independently?
That's a good question. So, in our rhythm of life here, every fall, we all study the same thing for the fall, starting in September and going usually till Thanksgiving. So we just finished that here. To give you a picture of what it was this fall, we've actually been in the Book of Romans since about February, going through it in our worship. And we scheduled everything so that we would hit Romans 12 at the beginning of our fall series. You know, Romans 12 sort of begins the real application part of, you know, how do I walk out all this theology I just learned. So we did Romans 12 through 16 as our fall series. We pitch it. We get people into groups. We use the fall series to get people into groups who've never been in groups before. So we say, here's what the fall is going to look like. Here's what our study for the next 8 weeks is going to look. This was 9 weeks. Our next 9 weeks are going to look like. And Mark will get up there and he'll say, our senior pastor, he'll go, here's what I'm going to deliver of that. And here's the part that's going to happen in groups. And the only place you're going to get this is if you're in a group. So you need to be in a group to get everything that's going to happen this fall. If you're not in a group and you've never been in a group and you never want to be in a group again, just go get in a group for these 9 weeks. We've got some starting next week that we call, then I call my groups, I don't call them grace groups, I call them whatever the series is. You know, this was, gee, how did I forget what this was? This was Life in HD. Well, this was Life in HD this time. So we created some Life in HD groups and to get folks who had never had a group experience before to come be a part of that. So for that, for the fall, all of our groups are studying the same thing. We're all working on the same thing. For the rest of the time, we're, and when a new group launches, it does that 8-week study that we talked about, so that's kind of prescribed. For the rest of the time, we're asking you to, along with your small group coach, as a leader, to assess what you need to be working on. What's the spiritual need of the group? Based on what we've said spiritual health is, what does the group need to be working on? And then we've got a dozen, two dozen, three dozen different studies in that area. And if you find a study that you like better, that fits that area, let us know. And we'll look at it with you and decide, yeah, go do that. That's a great idea. If we'd like to know, simply because we may have had some other group do that and have said, that study was not very helpful, it wasn't very useful, or, that study was actually made by the Mormon Church, so we should probably let you know that. So that's the only reason we want to know. If you do it and it's great, let us know. We'll put it on the list with the rest of them for folks to do. So I would say it's not prescribed, it's guided. That we want the study to be guided, not haphazard. I really, really, really ask groups, don't do this. Don't get to the end of your study now and then go, what do you guys want to study next? Because that's not a planned method of spiritual growth. We want something that's intentional and planned. But, we want to teach you how to intentionally plan your spiritual growth so that you can do it. You guys do it as a group and own it yourself.
Besides the numbers of the groups, number of your membership, number of members, do you have a measure for your, how do you measure your church's or members' spiritual growth or spiritual maturity?
I've been waiting for somebody to ask that question. Because we started with saying, remember, the two things that are our mission statement in spiritual formation in small groups is every person in a group and every group healthy. So how do you, I told you how we measure every person in a group. How do you measure every group healthy? Isn't that the question for every church in the world? How do you measure spiritual growth? That's the thing we're all wrestling with and trying to figure out how to. So that's a reasonable question. It's obviously not as tangible an answer, but we try to wrap as many tangible things around it as we can, so that we can have some answers to what that looks like. And it wraps again around the framework that we said about pursuing Christ, engaging each other, impacting the world. Those three relationships. Our first question about health is, if you look back 6 months as an individual or as a group, have you taken measurable steps, or have you grown further? Are you in a different place than you were in all three of those relationships? Are you doing something you weren't doing or making a bigger impact in the community or in the world than you were before? We break that one relationship down to three really important things, and so to help measure, we say that impacting the world is your personal evangelism to those people God has put in your circle. So your circle is where you work, where you go to school, where you know, your personal evangelism. Your community impact, where wherever your community is, where you're reaching out of the community to take the gospel, as in a way that you're helping the community to be able to speak the gospel, and your impact on the world. So we would ask any individual at Grace, what's personal evangelism look like for you? Have you had, in fact, we just recently did a survey where we said, have you had 6 or more significant personal conversations with somebody in the last year about who Christ is? So there's some things that we do to actually look and measure some of those things. What's your community story? And my community story might be I serve at the Helping Out Mission in order to be able to, to be able to connect and be able to hopefully connect with some folks to tell the gospel. It might be that I actually serve on the board of my townhouse association with the desire to make relationships that I can begin to speak into. But what's your, we want folks to go, here's my community story. And what's your world story? And, our hope is that your grace, that your world story is going to connect to one of our focus areas. But so your world story might be, me and some people in my small group, or me and some folks, we went to East Africa this year. we spent, you know, 2 weeks on a short-term mission trip, or we're connected to the missionaries that Grace has in China, and we're actually the group that sponsors them, or we're the group that talks, we're the group that takes care of them when they come home, or we have, you know, or we're, you know, we've adopted kids through Compassion in Latin America with us, or what's your world story? What are you doing to change the world for the gospel? So that's some things you can measure in just that one relational environment, right? And the spiritual health assessment asks some questions that are kind of pointed that way too. When you think about what's my what growth have I done when it comes to engaging each other, you know, and connecting and meeting the needs of the church and the folks that are in my circle. And so we actually, it's not like we check a box and say, yep, they did this, they did that. But there are some things that we, you know, we can look at and say, have they been to First Step? So have they made a commitment to be a member of Grace, to stand you know, along with us? But the real important thing for us when it comes to spiritual growth is, are you making steps to grow in those three relationships? One of the other things that we really hold out and look at is, you know, when you think about the Great Commission, it's clear that it's the mission of every person in the church to make disciples, that Jesus left us all with that mission. So we're hoping that we're all becoming believers, and growing to a level of maturity where all of us are making disciples who are able to make other disciples. And so that's, you know, that's another measurement that we would use to think of.
How do you deliver this? I mean, how do you, through the coach, through the sermon, or through the group leader, how do you train them? How do you deliver all this to the group of members and make them grow?
Through, specifically through in the group environment, because what we say on the weekend supports what we say in small group and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure we have the same message and the same mission. Specifically, like we said, through influence rather than prescription, but we do that through the different levels of training that happens for a small group leader.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of curriculum that a small group is working with, obviously that goes to them too. But we, our training is, we do 2 days worth of training for a new small group leader in the front end. They're connected to a small group coach that actually works with them regularly throughout the year, but when they're brand new, are connected with them every 10 days or so through the first 12 weeks of our life as a group. And then we meet all small group leaders a couple times a year for training, but coaches pull their leaders together. So if I'm a coach, I may coach anywhere from 3 to 8 groups worth of leaders, in other words, and I'll pull those leaders together regularly throughout the year, anywhere from 3 to, right now we have one set of coaches that are doing it 10 times a year for training and for leaders to learn from each other, practical stuff. You know, hey, have you ever had this happen in your group? Yeah, how'd you deal with that? Good, tell me your meeting with them, that kind of stuff. So the coaches are doing it at a smaller level so they can get 3, 8, 12 working people together.
So during the year, the coach will meet them about 10 times?
They're going to meet, if you include one-on-one meetings and then times that they all get together, it's probably, and then the couple times they come together with us, they're going to, a small group leader is probably going to be in, if they attend all of them, are going to have the opportunity to be a part of 10 to 12 training opportunities.
Mm-hmm. So for a small group leader, I mean, we all have different things, we are busy in life. I mean, how much time do you expect him to spend on the ministry in terms of either the disciple training, discipling others, or a group meeting and attend the training, or all this together? How many times or how many units?
I would say realistically, you're going to have your group time when the group meets, and the key to doing life together is, if these are the people that I do life with now, with my small group, it goes beyond that 2-hour meeting. But that doesn't become a chore. That becomes that becomes life. I mean, it's like, these are the folks I do life with now. So the women of that group may meet together to do all kinds of things together through the course of a month. The men of that group may be playing golf together, or maybe going to help build, you know, somebody's new room that they're working on together, because they're doing life together. So that, I don't really count that time, because now that's life. That's part of what you do. But you're going to meet together for the group. You may prepare for that meeting for an hour or so, depending on what it takes to get ready for the meeting. Making sure the resources are there, whatever. And then I don't think most group leaders aren't going to attend all the training that's available for them over a year, so they're probably going to come to five or six of those connections.
So basically, in addition to the 2 half-day training, you have about 5 or 6 or 10 smaller kind of trainings for group leaders.
That you have an opportunity to be a part of. Yeah. We have 2 that we all come together for, and then whatever your coach is doing.
All those are arranged by coach, not by the church.
There's 2 that are arranged by, that are actually I lead, that are that are here 2 months during the year. The rest are done by coaches.
So your coaches are also the used to be the group leaders and or their pastors.
I'm sorry.
How are the coaches?
How many coaches?
Yeah. I mean, coaches is they are how you provide the coach for the leaders.
Well, how do we find them? That was the hardest part of this job. I will tell you that that's only in the last couple of years have we really just, after praying for years, finding the right people and getting the right. Because I used to think the best small group leaders would make the best coaches, and that's not true. Sometimes it's true, but it's not something you can go through as almost every church I talk to has struggles with this. How do we build the coaching structure? Some have abandoned it completely and just declared it doesn't work. I will tell you that it works, but you got to work at it.
Who have been successfully ran the group. Here's what become the coach.
Oh, absolutely. Here's what worked successfully for me. Here's what worked best. Was I then started looking for people who love discipling others. Rather than somebody who maybe had been a great small group person, although that's really a quality that you would hope would be true for a small group leader too, because that's what we're doing, is making disciples. That's, you know, I think leading a small group in a successful way is carrying out the Great Commission in one of the most amazing ways you can do it. But for somebody who loves discipling one-on-one, coaching is more about one-on-one than it is about one-on-12. I may do a huddle, you know, every once in a while, but even my huddles are more about you guys learning from each other, if I just facilitate that right. I'm going to spend more time in a conversation with you. I ask my coaches to invest in the life of the leader and know that whatever you do to disciple that leader is going to drift down into the group. I promise. Don't worry about, you know, we don't ask our coaches to do any of the paperwork or tell me what's going, who's in the group or anything. We take care of that centrally. You know, I want you to disciple and be in the life of that leader, and I promise that'll go down to 12 or 14 more people. That whatever you do, whatever's going on in their life is gonna go on in the life of those other folks. So that's really and that became way, you know, I just began to recognize who's doing that already and ask, you know, do you want to come be a part of what we're doing? That was one of the more successful ways. Something I should tell you about our groups that maybe I haven't mentioned yet that I think is just huge when we talk about healthy groups. We've got a list of, I should have made you copies, I'm sorry I didn't, of 6 things that we say are true of every healthy group. One of them I think is important because it stands out from most groups that I've seen in the past. And that is, we say that in a healthy group, everybody has a role. No leader leads alone. I tell every leader, do not lead alone. And what I mean by that is, in a healthy group environment, every one of us here in the group is leading something. That ultimately we're going to get to where it's something we are all contributing to. We don't want an environment where I come to your group. Because if I come to Fan's group, then I can decide tonight at 6 o'clock after I've worked all day and it's really tough, that if I don't show up, they're not going to miss me. But if I'm in charge of prayer for that group because I'm the prayer warrior, something's going to miss if I'm not there. If I'm in charge of hospitality or whatever, because that's my gift and that's what God's given me, and so Fan said, hey, you're obviously gifted in that. Would you be in charge of that for us from now on? Then something's not going to happen if I'm not there. If I'm the one in charge of evangelism, deciding where we're going to get involved in the community or how we're going to do world outreach, if that's my gift or my call, then now it's our group, right? We all bring something to it. It's, you know, I'm not... You know, the leader might be the guy connected to the church, sometimes our leader is not even the one who facilitates the meetings because that's not their best gift. Sometimes the leader is the one who does the best job of connecting people to the groups when we send them to them because they're the ones who connect best to us. That's okay. What we just say, a healthy group, everybody's leading something because we were all created to be the body of Christ, right? We were all created with gifts, and a group should look like that, just like a church should, where that you're operating in your group at the strength and the gifting that God's given you. So that group is not coming to somebody's group. That's the difference in a class. And I don't know what the other groups you were talking about might look like, but that's certainly the difference in most of the environments that I've seen in some churches and the ones that we want to create to be healthy, is that we come together all bringing who we are to that group and investing. A healthy group is one who realizes that, just like a healthy church is. Church is what I bring to it, not what I take away from it. Church is an attitude of what has God done and given me today to give to you versus what did I come to get. You know, church isn't really, I didn't like that message today because it didn't speak to me, or that worship wasn't that great because I didn't come away feeling tingly. Church is, who does God want me to invest in today? In the lobby, in the children's ministry, and so a small group. I hope everybody comes to small group every time going, somebody in this room has something they need that God's going to use me to provide. So I want to be ready for that.
I have a question. How do you deal in the small group of crap? I think the church of Christians is a part of the small group of Christianity and crazy. Mm-hmm. But for our church, we don't have this system. So how do we start?
That's a great question, and let me give you my best wisdom on that I can tell you. And there's lots of different ways you could do it, but if I were to say how to do that, let's just say one thing you could do is I'm looking at how many folks are here now? 11 people.
Yeah.
You're a small group. If you decided as a team of people, we're going to meet as a small group for the next 3 months, this team. We're going to be a small group. We're going to do this together. We're going to practice everything we've learned. I'll even give you the community study, the first 8-week study that we do all the time when we do it together. Give you that. Say, go buy the books for this and do this together. But in the middle of that, you know, Fance read a couple of books that I gave him that are really significant in the important things about small groups. So that from some leaders that we just know that are just really good at this. But here's what we're going to do. At the end of 3 months, every one of us are going to go off, and we're going to start our own small group. Then I would tell you that if you did that and decided if we're going to do it for 3 months, we're going to do it for 4 months, it wouldn't matter. Because 4 months from now, you would be 11 groups that could all handle 12 people. I think we just made enough small groups to handle most of your church, right?
Yeah.
How many people are?
Yeah, we're definitely enough.
Right.
Whole church.
So there's a model. That learn how to do group together, and so maybe it's not you guys, but maybe it is, to learn how to do group together so well that, but you know from the beginning, when it's over, we're going to all go out and start one. And it's important that groups always, another important part of group, you know, one of my other healthy small groups things is every healthy small group is growing. Every healthy thing that God has created grows. I don't, you know, whether it's a plant or a human, or, you know, we all grow, we all multiply. And every healthy group does. So those groups that you started to be healthy and keep going, if it's 11 times 11 or 11 times 12 people in a group, to be healthy and keep growing, they've got to go be figuring out how they grow. And that means they're investing in people's lives. And if there are not any more people in your church, then they got to go invest in people's lives in their neighborhood and invite them into their small group. And you know, I will tell you that one of the ways people come to our church is that many, many, many people come into our small groups before they ever come into our church. And every time we have a starting point group in this room, there is at least one person who has never been in that worship center, who is coming here because somebody at work or school or something said, you got questions about what God is or who God is? We got this environment. You don't even have to go to church. Because they'll go, I hate church. I decided I'm never going back to church. Okay, don't go to church. Don't even go close to that. The room is really right over the edge of the building. Just go meet these guys. And so they'll come for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. And I don't think we've done a starting point. There hasn't been somebody in this room that somebody invited them into a small group environment to try out what it really means to be the church, because there's nothing better. So imagine, again, if you dreamed with me and said 11 times 12, and imagine 12 groups that you guys were leading a year from now, where all the people in that group were looking in their neighborhoods or at work, or, you know, to say, who could we invite to be a part of this small group? Because people are much more likely to come to Christ if they sit in a circle of people who love Jesus and are really living it out together, and they get to live it out together and play together and eat together and do life together and realize, these folks love Jesus. They have families just like me. They're having the same problems I do. We're being authentic together. This is a much better environment to hope that folks are going to come to Christ in than actually asking, will you come sit in rows with me and listen to a message that's pretty much designed for Christians. I would say you'd have 11 small groups who would be great evangelistic tools for your church.
I have a question. Is there anyone in your church who attend more than one group?
Oh, yes. And again, that's capacity. Everybody's life is different, you know. It's often singles, you know, or somebody who's, you know, who's divorced or something, who has more capacity, who has more, and would say, you know, sometimes we'll have somebody who's in a substance abuse program or been in one, or, you know, has been in a 12-step program, and they're looking for ways to keep their lives busy so that they don't, you know, and so they'll be in two groups and be asking me for another one that they can be a part of. And I understand that. That's about life. We have lots of guys like who are in the men's group on Monday, and then they're in a group with their wife on Wednesday night or Thursday that they're doing together. So that's another great example of somebody who might be in more than one group.
So we, for example, start a group. But the thing is that we all have families. If we cannot get all these families together, that's going to be too big a group, right?
So start two.
So. Now, let's say we meet Friday night, then you know, for about 8 weeks, you have the material, we can borrow and use. Then we can start from there.
You can start from there. Decide that you guys will meet as a group for 4 or 6 months, working through things that you've learned with the books that you've been reading and the things that we're learning together in the smaller network, with the understanding that. This group, they're called, in the terms of how this is kind of done, they're called turbo groups, so that everybody in the group understands that a part of being a part of this group is when it ends, and decide when it's going to end, 4 months, 6 months, whatever is fine. When it ends, all of us are going to go out, or each family is going to go out and start a group that people will get to be a part of. And like we said, sitting in this room is enough people to lead so that every person in your church could have a group.
You have this February 1st and this March 1st group leader training, right?
Yes.
So can we, you know, come gather in and...
Absolutely. I just need to know you're coming, but if you let me know who's coming, everybody can come and be a part of it. We have group links on the 26th, and then after that we'll do 101 training that next Saturday and 201 training a month from now.
We have a youth pastor. The English pastor, he could not be here because his mother just passed away. Very sorry about it. He is very passionate about this, and he was talking about, you know, have a leadership group and start to, you know, get everybody familiar with how to run the group, how to do the group. And so we have several other people, so they might join us probably, you know, if we can start.
Just let me know. We'll make it as big as we need to.
Okay. We also need some coach who need your help, you know, to make work better. Otherwise, we sort of more like used to have Bible study groups, right? And not really, you know, a life group as we define the healthy and independent areas. So we sort of don't have the enough experience in terms of how to monitor, how to enhance the group leaders, how to, as a church, look after them, encourage them, make them all healthy, and also, you know, bind together as part of the church. In our church, we don't have our own. We in weekends we invite different pastors from a around to preach. Mm-hmm. And every pastor just designed their message according to how they moved. We don't have a centralized kind of theme or, you know, and a persistent encouragement and all this to put the things together. So that's a part of our problem.
Well, part of what, well, if you decide that you guys want to start two turbo groups, if that's what it looks like, after the first 8 weeks of doing community, because that gives you a great feel and sort of pulls you guys together, there's a couple of things that we can do that that I can give you that would be actually towards coaching. Because that's what everybody's going to sort of become, a smaller leader, because some stuff that you can study that I actually began with too, that you can make part of your group experience after that, that would actually teach you guys beyond the one-on-one and two-on-one that you can be a part of with us. We'll teach you the specifics of what it looks like to small group coach and to be a small group leader and to carry you through some of that. So we can, I can show you some of that that you can find that will be great maybe after the first 8 weeks, knowing that that's where you're going is for everybody to lead after that's done. There's some great studies that can help you a part of that. And as you know, that's what we talk about every month or every time we get together for the small group network as well, is how do we keep these ministries healthy?
Yeah, that's the most essential part of it, of the small group, is the healthy.
Yes.
Of the group, and also we sort of you know, study some part of the Jim Putman about how to do discipleship and the four stages of discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
Do that.
Have you guys been looking at that together? The Jim Putman stuff, real life discipleship.
We have not done it together yet, but we sort of copied some of his tapes, his VCDs, and some of us. Listen to him by five or six VCDs.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, we got some of our ideas.
I'm
nine.
I'm actually taking all of my small group coaches through that right now.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow morning we meet together at 9 o'clock, and we're working on week 3 and 4 of the workbook tomorrow.
The workbook.
Yeah.
So
So all of our small group coaches right now are going through.
Okay.
Real life discipleship work, and with the idea that I want them to turn around and be able to use some of that to is in their huddles when they get group leaders together to help train them. So, yeah, we're on the same page with that. I really like.
Can we also, like, for example, we do like 2 months of the community together, get together. Then after that, we work on that manual as a one group or two group. Everybody have trained. On how to, you know, disciple others. Is that another way to do it?
That is certainly another way to do it. That's not a bad approach. I'll show you a couple other things that I've used in the past to help do turbo groups that give some real practical how to small group leader stuff and even coaching stuff. What does it look like? So we, in a quick, you know, when our coaches meet together with folks and figure out how they're gonna meet with people.
Oh,
there's they do, I've talked about, they do one-on-one meetings, obviously face-to-face kind of one-on-one stuff, and they do huddles together that, you know, like we talked about. But they use those two primarily to and that came out of a, you know, that I can show you some of the training of what does it look like to do a one-on-one, and what does it look like to do a huddle for the folks that we've trained folks for. Well, I appreciate the, you know, spending time.
Thank
you very
much.
Thank you very much.
But there's one thing Bob, we need to have. We sort of, you know, we have...